Hi again, I'm Gina Kaufman, and my next guest on KCUR's Central Standard is a musician whose genre has alternately been called avant-garde folk or, my personal favorite, guitar and growl. Nicholas St. James, good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you.
You've got a new album out. Tell me about it.
We did it live. It's not a pop record. It sounds like something you might hear from the 30s, from the 50s, sort of that old rock and roll, where's the kick drum sound, four microphones for three people, three musicians plus a vocal, of course. The idea was, as a solo performer, for the most part, it's hard to go in and cut a record unless you want to do it with just whatever your primary instrument is, in my case, guitar and vocal. So if you want to add things, it becomes difficult to do so and still sound like yourself. So a lot of what we did was we took consideration to make sure that it came out still sounding like me. So if someone sees a show, buys a record, they're not hearing something completely unexpected. But I come from sort of the school of thought that less is more in the studio, especially since I'm a solo performer. So we did it quick, 10 songs, about 10 hours live at a bar.
What bar?
The Jazz House in Lawrence. They were closed, but I played that room so much. I wanted the room. I wanted to hear the room in this. You don't hear that a lot in records nowadays, unless they digitally added in afterwards. But we didn't close mic anything. It's not a pristine record.
So it's like someone sitting there with you.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a live record. Very much so.
It's the album's got a warped looking Rubik's Cube on the cover. What's that about?
I remember as a child having a Rubik's Cube, and this is when they still made them with, it was really hard to find one with stickers still. They don't make them with stickers anymore.
Oh, weird.
Sounds wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you. the idea was to sort of as a child take the Rubik's Cube apart and put it back together, sort of cheating, and sort of not a metaphor for how the album is laid out, but it's just that idea of this is sort of life, as I guess I see it today, is you can put it together, but it's a mess.
The Rubik's Cube dilemma. How would you describe your style?
Folk is the easiest way, I would say, but I have a lot of blues influence as well. So I guess as much as one man on one guitar can do, it's very much folk, the way it's presented and the way the songs come across. But my influences from Bob Dylan to Tom Waits to The Kills more recently. I mean, it's, you just try to do as much on this one instrument as you can, and you put yourself in a box and say, okay, well, I do play folk music, but because it's just me, I can also play a jazz song terribly. But if I wanted to, I could do it, or just a 1-4-5 number, a simple.
So you're just going to sound like you more than a genre.
To say yes would be pretentious, I suppose. But I guess that's the answer, though. And that goes for most one man, one woman acts, is you're in a very small box regarding what you can do sonically, but you can do so much more sort of on the spot and at will. So yes and no, I guess, is the answer to the question.
Let's go ahead and give our listeners a little taste. I want to hear the song You Already Know. Anything you want to share about this tune before we hear it?
Michael Stevenson, who plays guitar in this track, we recorded it live, and the idea was to have it sound like it's just a couple guys in a room. And the way we did it, it wasn't turn up the snare, turn up the guitar. Everything was kind of set when we went to mix it. And listen to the guitar on this. It is fantastic. He just absolutely destroyed this song.
Okay, this is All You Already Know from the new Nicholas St. James album, Theaters.
Prison's almost empty, the church is nearly full. Yeah, yesterday's tomorrow, and the spring is the fall. Breakfast for supper, mortgage on a box, a hostage running ransom, and your cards on the fly. Box without wheels, a bear on a leash, St. Francis in hell, a honeymoon on repeat. Politicians in the draft, soup with a fork, accidental glitterati, New York, New York. How you live here is only on you. Go to stiletto or
Nicholas St. James. This seems to be, if I might, a song kind of about things being just topsy-turvy. And I can recognize certainly the Bob Dylan influence in the lyrics.
Oh, wow. You
know,
thank you.
The spoon with a fork, the jelly-faced women say I can't find my knees. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, can you talk a little bit more about this song and where it was coming from, maybe concept-wise?
A lot of what I write, I tell folks this often, is I can't write a personal song. Something that I want to write something that happened to me exactly. So what I do end up doing is writing observational songs, things that I'm seeing and the way I see the world. If you want to get into that, and the song is sort of about that reality of there are no accidents. You're getting to where you're getting for a reason. There are, and a lot of people, I feel like there's a lot of blame, and there's another song on the record that I may play later, that's sort of the same vein of people put off blame to a lot of other things for their situation in life. And that's not really the way it should be, at least in my eyes. People sort of owning up to what's happening. The line in the song, accidental glitterati, there's no such thing. You don't. The people who become famous and then hate being famous, you have to work really hard to be famous. And that you can easily get out of that by moving to Montana. Or so, you know, so it's that idea of just you hear all the time, the reality TV show, you know, 9 to 5 on CBS or whatever. You're watching these things, and who puts themselves in that position? And I was watching one of those silly shows one day and realized these people made this decision to be here, to come on The Rock of Love or whatever the show is. And that was a really weird thing for me because I'm so far, I can't imagine putting myself or my family or whomever in that position. But then these people make that decision, and that was just sort of the catalyst for the song, and the song goes deeper, maybe not as deep, I don't know, into that, but that's sort of what it's about. And the record actually has a lot of that thought in it, that make your own decisions, don't blame anybody else, but make good decisions.
How did you get into music? I mean, beyond, like, hobby status?
Sure. The thing I've always loved about music is that it's mine. I don't come from a family of musicians. I used to hate that. I used to hate that I couldn't tell my friends, oh, my great-grandfather was a jazz pianist in New York, and then I come from this long lineage. But I've come to really love it. I found it, and it was something that I nurtured, and I was encouraged along the way. It certainly wasn't as if, you know, folks were saying, this is a terrible idea, you should stop. And a few years ago, I realized it was a hobby that I was spending a lot of time on. And unlike maybe building, you know, model cars in the basement, it was something, and I apologize if that's a big thing where you can go to a convention and find notoriety, but it was something where I could go out in public and do this. I was spending so much time at home doing it. I just made the decision one day, 2013, I'm going to go do this. I love this enough that I'm taking this jump, if you will.
I mean, the way you talk about it, it's like you were just sitting there thinking and that light bulb went on. Was it like that? Or was there a moment where something happened?
But the sitting there thinking, that was a number of years. So it wasn't as if I was at Starbucks and said, I'm going to do this now.
The light bulb went on slowly.
It was a dimmer and it was slowly raised up. But then it was at some point you just say, all right, I'm taking the jump, and you start figuring out, okay, where can this take me? And that's not necessarily I'm somewhat opposed to the fact that with any sort of art, there's always that fame aspect tied to it. Being able to pay your bills is a lot more exciting to me than being on the cover of a Rolling Stone. So you start looking at it as more than a hobby, and you start doing things that you didn't really think were involved in the process. And that takes time, but it was years of in the making. And then one day finally saying, I don't want to be 60 and say, well, I can do this, but my dog and my girlfriend are the only ones that have ever heard it.
You come from St. Louis, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. You're just there yesterday.
How would you say that there's a difference when you came to Kansas City? I mean, in Was there a difference in the way the music scene was in St. Louis and what you found here?
Oh, without a doubt. As mentioned, I'm from St. Louis. I lived there until I was nearly 21. And going there and finding a place to play is very difficult for me. Not because there aren't places, but finding a place that makes sense for me. And I'm from there. I lived there for nearly 21 years. Kansas City is such a different town as well. The music scenes aren't necessarily different, but Kansas City is... I was talking to someone about this the other day. It's on such an upswing right now, where St. Louis is everything you've heard about it. I love the town to death, but I'm glad I'm here.
Kansas what City have we is, heard about it?
It's dangerous. The people there are very... that East Coast mentality, and I didn't realize until I'd moved to Kansas City. You grow up there and you hear folks say, well, there's an East Coast mentality. Well, we're in the Midwest. What are you talking about? St. Louis has this, and I've traveled quite a bit now, St. Louis has this attitude that you find on the East Coast, for better or worse, and then you drive 4 hours to the west, Kansas City, and you're very much in the Midwest. And I was just up in Chicago a few days ago, and when I got back to Kansas City, nobody was cutting me off in traffic any longer. There were a lot less horns. And the music scene in Kansas City is so supportive and on such, like most of the town, it's on such an upswing right now that it's just a great place to be in. And you don't really realize that. Just how special it is to be here right now until you travel and see other cities, be it St. Louis, Chicago, Oklahoma City, wherever you're going, and you say, oh, wow, Kansas City has something going on right now. And that applies to the music scene and the arts, sports, of course, everything we have going on here right now.
In thinking about your style and how to describe it, something that kind of came to mind is this question of pretty versus gritty. And I wonder if that is a question that speaks to you.
I like that. Addressing the pretty, I think if you're not doing something with some sort of pop element to it, you're not going to be asked back to play. Doing what I do, or any musician for that matter, if you are going in somewhere and you're not doing the pretty, then you're probably not going to be back, and you're probably not going to have many people wanting to see you. And not to say that that's the end all be all, but if you want to keep doing it as I do, that's kind of important. And the gritty, I agree with both. The gritty is that idea of, to me at least, mistakes. A live show, for me, I love recording. I love playing. The live show is the most important thing to me, not the records. I enjoy making the records, but putting a good live show together. And the idea, I think, to most, I'm not going to say to most, but the idea to some musicians that if they were to mess up on stage, it would just be devastating. I think that adds to the excitement when folks see a live show. There need to be elements of it that, yeah, are well rehearsed, but if you mess up, you get gritty. That's just showing the folks in the audience. They're listening to a live music, and that's the point of doing the record the way we did it as well.
Well, I want to hear another tune. This one's actually from your EP. It's called What Was Right. And I have to say before we hear it, I love the way it begins and ends. Can you say a few words about that?
Yeah, we recorded this onto a 4-track reel-to-reel, a tape machine. And on the EP, the 4-song EP I put out 2014, I did crossfades between all four of the songs, and the way to get in and out of this one, we took the tape machine and just rewound the tape and then let it play into the song, and at the end we just hit the rewind button, and then you get that fast speed up and slow down.
All right, this is What Was Right.
Of my covers at night, I've been rambling from place to place, staying in town with sorrow.
What would you say is the difference? I mean, I can hear the difference in the sound between this EP and your most recent album, Theaters, and it's not just the recording, the difference in sure. how it was recorded, but the difference in the musical style.
Well, I haven't listened to that in a long time. And that's what, sort of what I like about live performance is that you're as good as the last one. With the records, they stick. The difference with the EP, we did a lot of overdubbing, a lot of layering, and I'd only been singing for that point for about a year. So I can listening to that now, like I said, I haven't listened to that in a long time. My voice is still, I'm still learning how to use it. I've been playing guitar for about 10 years, and I have a little bit more than an elementary understanding of how to use that. But vocally, I'm still figuring that out, and that's completely different on the EP than it is on the record.
What do you think you've figured out since then?
Technique, is sort of where boundaries are. I mean, not necessarily is even regarding range, but technique's a very easy thing to figure out. You know when you're sharp or flat, and I record a lot of what I do, my shows, that is, and I'll go back and listen to them. And working on technique and breathing is one thing. But then also figuring out, again, one guy, it took me a long time to realize that the vocal is the center of what I do. So making my voice more theatrical, I guess, would be the best way to put that.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and KCUR Central Standard has to take a short break. When we return, more music from Nicholas St. James. His new album is called Theaters. Hi again, Nick.
Hello again.
I'm Gina Kaufman. That's musician Nicholas St. James. He's got a charmingly scratchy new album called Theaters, and it's equal parts music and storytelling. We're getting to know both the man and the music today on KCUR's Central Standard. And Nick, your stories, I mean, there is a lot of storytelling in these. Sometimes they're stories about yourself. Sometimes they're characters. But they're a little like haikus. They touch the very high and the very low. Sewers, an example of perhaps the low.
Sewer Service, yes. That's one of the oldest songs that I have. I wrote that years ago. And when I went down to do the EP, it just didn't make the cut. And up until the day that was recorded, I think I had rewritten it probably four or five times, one of which, the last revision, if you will, was probably the week before it was recorded. That one specifically, it took me a long time to sort of fall in love with that one, a lot of over and over and over playing it live.
Why write songs about things like sewers?
Well, sewer service is, the term itself comes from if you're going to serve someone papers for court, tossing them in the sewer, in the garbage. And just that idea of being in love with somebody, but that you can't express that to them. You have these, the line is, I write you a letter every day and then I throw it away. That that feeling of lust or whatever you want to call it for somebody, but there's that thing in the back of your mind saying, don't do it.
Well, I want to hear a little bit more of your music. And this is what I want to hear is the last song from your most recent album. It's called Yodel Waltz. And I wonder if this concludes a larger story that the album tells.
It's definitely when I laid out the songs for the record, it was definitely the last song on the record. And that probably plays into it. I don't write happy songs, unfortunately. And the song is just sort of about that idea of there are ways out of this, good or bad. And it's that idea of sort of the devil coming to the door, the crossroads, if you will. And then the end, here I am, make your choice.
Well, this is Yodel Waltz.
Forget a face, I'll never forget a name. I remember every person that I've ever met, but you gotta to stay in the game. I sell tea to the baker's daughter, yeah, and I sell bullets to his son, and they're starting a war, but the teeth are for, that ain't my business, none.
Nicholas St. James. We didn't play the song all the way to the end, so what listeners don't know is how dramatically it ends.
It ends with about a minute and a half of really poorly done yodeling. Yeah, and it's just that, and then it. I'm a big fan of the sort of "I want you, she's so heavy," just fade to, not even fade to black, cut to black. It just stops abruptly, but the song dynamically goes nowhere. It's the longest song on the record, 6-something minutes, and it doesn't go dynamically anywhere. What you heard is there are no more ups and downs, but hopefully the story. That was intentional to put emphasis on the lyrics.
Talk to me about storytelling in your music.
It's either writing a song is incredibly easy to do. Writing a good song, something that you even yourself think is good, before you let anybody else hear it, is incredibly difficult to do if you care for the lyrics in the way in which most folk musicians do. Because you want to be, and this is, I say this all the time, this is why Bob Dylan is Bob Dylan, because he. People like him and great writers can get incredibly specific, but then they'll leave out one or two details that then the listener can make, oh, well, that's me. That's my story. I didn't know that Bob was following me around.
Well, I'm going to have you play a song live in the studio. It's called Something Better, and it's got a kazoo in it.
It does.
Yeah. I'm really excited about that. I'll let you go ahead and set up for that. And I think we've talked a little bit about the difference between live performance and recording, and it seems like live performance is kind of your jam. So, yeah, I'm really excited that we get this opportunity. Anything you want to say about Something Better before you play?
I think this was only able to come about because of my disgusting love for history, I think, and just sort of seeing it repeat itself over and over, unfortunately.
What's so disgusting about a love of history?
Maybe not disgusting, maybe abnormal in this day and age. And that I'll be up until 4 in the morning watching old History Channel things. So this is Something Better.
Charlie holds a gun in his hand, studying rotation at the bank. Granny lost a baby boy, and he's been missing with no reward to claim. I heard the stories when I was just a kid. Uncle C was the bag man of the state. His problems all came with a bottle of blame, and he sees 12 colors, but you know there's only 8. Jesus Christ, he died on a Tuesday. Lee Harvey shot from a window pane. We all want something better, oh boy, and bigger to blame. Charlie kept his dogs in the yard, fearing one day they'd bite him back. They gave his job to a Mexican man, and don't you think he ever forgot that? Jesus Christ, he died on a Tuesday. Lee Harvey shot from a window pane. We all want something better, oh boy, and bigger to blame. He was cursed from the start, yeah. Well, a voodoo doll full of pins, Everything is free when it gets dark. Yeah, at least it was, according to him. Jesus Christ died on a Tuesday at land. Lee Harvey shot from a window pane. We all want something better, old boy, and bigger to blame. Jesus Christ died on a Tuesday at land. Lee Harvey shot from a window pane. We all want something better, old boy, and bigger to blame.
Nicholas St. James, that was awesome. Thank you. You know my favorite part of that?
I don't know.
When you spit out the kazoo to keep going.
You got to do something with it. It's hard to sing with it in there.
Yeah. Well, and I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for this live performance, for this interview. Any shows coming up?
I'm actually playing tonight at the Oak Room at the Intercontinental in the Plaza.
Well, so that's an opportunity to hear Nicholas St. James, whose new album called Theaters has just come out and who just spoke to us. It's been so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina.
You can listen back to our discussion with musician Nicholas St. James at kcur.org/centralstandard. And if you missed our conversation about the lack of academic jobs in the arts to go with all those fancy arts degrees, that'll be there too, kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, it's a portrait session with the Land Institute's Wes Jackson. If you don't know him, he's kind of a big deal in sustainability circles, and you should check it out. That's tomorrow at 10. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Special thanks to Steven Steigman. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date with Steve Kraske. Next.